Well, hello, everybody. My name is Eric Fox. I am the chief economist at Veros Real Estate Solutions.
I'm Reena Agarwal. I am a senior research economist at Veros Real Estate Solutions.
And welcome to RiskWire. This is our very first podcast. It's called On the House. And it's all about looking at everything that's housing market related, whether it be house prices or mortgage rates or affordability, topics about the U.S. economy. And Reena and I, we always talk about the housing market every single day. And we have these wonderful conversations. So we thought, why not do that in a podcast format? So that's what we're doing here today.
Yep. So we are here to make sense of all the housing market trends you hear about, all the macroeconomic trends you hear about. So we are going to simplify it and talk about what's happening in the housing market for you.
Well, I think one thing I get all the time, Reena, is affordability is a major problem. And I think that's what we are going to be talking about here today. And people say, how in the world can I ever get into this market? Prices are as high as they've ever been. And what can I do? And so I think this will make for an interesting conversation today.
I think that sounds right, because I also hear from colleagues as well as friends, prices are going up so much. You think they're going to come down? Will we be able to buy a house anytime soon? Where are mortgage rates going? So I think as our very first podcast, this is a great topic to discuss.
Well, let's maybe go into some of the things that are causing affordability to be so bad today. So what are some thoughts that you have on that?
Well, the first thing that everybody's talking about is, of course, the mortgage rates.
Yeah.
Right now, they are close to 7%. And kind of people are comparing this 7% with what we had in 2021, 2022, when they were 3% or even lower than 3%. And now they are double or more than double that amount. And everybody thinks, oh, gosh, mortgage rates are so high. But if you look at it historically, from 1970s to 2000, the average mortgage rate was 9.9%. So that was way higher than what we have now. So I think it's just this perspective, this relative numbers that we are seeing. So, but they're still elevated.
Yeah.
And where do you think mortgage rates are going?
Well, I guess I would say one thing for sure, they're not going back down to 3 or 4% again. I think that was a one-time anomaly. It was driven by COVID, and hopefully we will never see a pandemic like that again. Who knows? But unfortunately, I think the media after rates started to go back up, started saying rates are going to come back down again. It's just a matter of time before we're back under 5%. And I know you and I were talking and we said, can you think of a reason why rates will be below 5%? Neither of us could come up with one. And we kept saying, we think rates are going to stay elevated for the foreseeable future. And that's pretty much what they've done. So I think that once folks get into the mindset that interest rates aren't coming down and you have to live your life, that's probably a good thing. But that's certainly a major reason why affordability is the way it is today.
That's right. And in conjunction with those high rates, we all know house prices skyrocketed since the pandemic. In the last 5 years, the average U.S. prices have gone up by 55% across the country.
That's a lot.
So suddenly we see prices are high and mortgage rates are high, and folks are comparing it to 2020 and 2021, when prices were probably 50% lower than what they are now. Mortgage rates were 3%. So it was easy to go and buy that house. And mm-hmm. suddenly, you know, it's, and also not so many houses are up there for sale. So it's becoming difficult to find that house.
Well, Rena, one of the things you do all the time is you're our resident expert here at Veros on our house price forecasts. So even though prices are elevated and interest rates are relatively high compared to what they were a couple of years ago, do you foresee prices to be going down on a national basis in the foreseeable future?
Unfortunately, not. Our forecast is predicting that over 2025, house prices across the U.S. will go up by 2.7%. And house price appreciation has kind of slowed down, and that is because more homes are coming on the market. We are seeing supply going up slowly, but still supply is below what it was in a balanced market. Mm-hmm. Another thing that is happening is that a lot of the supply is what we call stale. That is, these are homes that are either overpriced because the homeowners think that's what the price should be, or they are not desirable homes. They are not in the proper condition. They are in neighborhoods or areas where people don't want to buy. So the desirable supply is really small. Mm-hmm. So, and those homes are still getting multiple offers. That's why prices are continuing to go up.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I just before I, or as I was looking over some of my notes for the podcast today, one of the things I checked, I went back to all the data here in the U.S. back to 1963 and looked at what the average house price was in the United States. And then I calculated the average appreciation on an annual basis mm-hmm. for each year of the last 60 years. So I'm going to put you on the spot here, Rena. How many of those 60 years would you think house prices declined?
I would say probably 3 or 4 years. And I'd say most of that time was during the Great Recession from 2007 to 2008-9. And probably some in the 1970s or 1980s when we had the oil price embargo and the recession that time. That's my guess.
Well, that's why you're a senior research economist here at Veros, because all that time, only 6 years out of 60, so that's 10% of the mm-hmm. time, did house prices go down. And in many of those situations, they went down by 1% or 2%. Right. So one might argue that's not really that big a deal.
Yeah.
If we look at major decreases like 7, 8, 10%, it was only 4 times. But on average, what do you think the average appreciation is for the other 55, 54 times?
I would think 4 to 5%.
It was 5.5%, which was a little bit bigger than I thought. Mm-hmm. So the point is, I think sometimes when people are getting concerned about what the interest rates are, about the affordability,
yes.
the odds are pretty good that what you're getting ready to buy is going to generate a pretty good return, provided you plan to hold it for 30 or 40 years, that's which... Everybody needs a place to live, so people tend to hold on to their houses for quite some time. So that I think is an interesting statistic to help sort of accommodate us to wanting to purchase houses and say, let's just not even do that. That's a little bit too extravagant. So you mentioned interest rates, you mentioned high house prices, and then associated with that, you mentioned that you're forecasting prices to get even higher. Is there anything else that's causing affordability issues
today? Well, a reason that a lot of young people are saying is that, yes, house prices have been going up and everybody bought their homes, whether it was in the 70s or 80s with the 10% mortgage or 16% mortgage. But right now, incomes have not gone up as much as... house prices. So in the last 5 years, house prices have gone up by 55%, but incomes have only gone up by 26%. So we see a mismatch here between how much people can afford. And to add to that, it's not just paying back the mortgage. We are also seeing that home insurance costs are rising because of all the weather events, hurricanes, wildfires, flooding, and property prices have also been going up. So all those are adding to the monthly payments that folks need to shell out to buy a house. So that is why there is concern about affordability. But I guess we can help people find out ways to save money. And you also bought a home when you were just out of college, I believe. So how did you find that money to buy a house?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Rena, because I look back at my circumstance and everything was different back then. Prices were lower. But what do you think my interest rate I paid? It was 1990. What do you think the interest rate was I had to pay for my very first house?
I'm thinking 9-10% at that time.
So I had to pay 10.25%, and I had to pay a point. I don't know if you know what a point is, but that means I had to pay essentially a percent of the value of my mortgage as a fee at closing for the privilege of getting an interest rate of 10.25% instead of taking the market rate of 10.75%. So yes, the prices were lower, but interest rates were sky high. And I really didn't have a lot of money saved. So back then what I did is I realized I had to save up for a 10% down payment. And even with the lower prices, 10% of the price of a house is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money
when I had a checking account balance that was three digits. So it, and plus some cents, but it wasn't a big number. So I had to try to figure out a way to save money so I could just get to that 10% figure. And what I did is I decided that I was going to move from my beautiful one bedroom, one bath apartment in with a roommate who was looking for someone, and into his two bedroom, two bath apartment. So I rented and my rent cut in half. And so that amount of money I was then able to save. But the thing I didn't realize was that I got paid twice a month. And I got a check on the first of the month, and I got a check on the 15th of the month. My mortgage was due on the first. So the first check went to the mortgage. And it almost entirely, almost all of my take home for that first paycheck, the amount was it was very similar, went to write the check to the bank. So that means my first check, I had no money. And then the second check on the 15th, I had money, but I had to live the whole month on that money. So it really was not an easy thing to do. And this was back in 1990. It was not an easy thing to do. I had to buckle down. I had to make some tough choices on things to spend and purchase and things not to purchase. But at the end of the day, I was successful. And fast forward a few years, everything was fine and I had no issues. But that, I don't know of a way to say it's easy.
Yes.
Now, did you have a similar experience?
I would say similar experience. When we bought our first house, we had our eldest daughter and our younger one was on the way. And we had started saving up and saved up 20%, in fact, for the down payment. And as you said, you know, keep other expenses really low or not spend on fancy things. So that's how it was, I think, you know, just like judiciously saving up for the 20%. And then once we shelled out that 20%, you said, like you said, you know, a three digit bank or something similar. So, but you know, it worked out. So.
Well, one of the surprises I had was I thought I was all ready to buy the house. I went down to the bank to get pre-qualified before I started looking for a house. I told them I have my 10% down. They saw the amount in my bank account because it was with that bank. And they said, but you do know you're going to need more money than that to close. And I'm like, why? Well, because you have to show 2 months of reserves of your income so that you can cover expenses if they were to come along. The bank doesn't want to see when you write your check for your down payment that you have $0 left. They want to see 2 months reserve. Well, that was a surprise to me as well, which meant I had a roommate a little bit longer. And I finally was able to get the 2 months reserve. And then I started house shopping. But that was a surprise to me.
Well, what we did is I borrowed money from my brother. He sent over a check to me so we could show to the bank folks, hey, you know, we have the money to tide over the next couple of months. And that was it.
Oh, very clever. Very clever. I like that approach. Well, are there any general strategies? Obviously, we have given a couple here. Are there any other strategies on how to save money for a home down payment?
So I was recently reading this article. This was written by Zillow, actually, and they call it 21 Creative Ways to Save Money for Home Down Payment. And I found this article really interesting. And one of my favorite ways that they have written about is what couples are doing when they're getting married. They are adding a new home fund to their registries. So basically, they are asking their family and friends to give cash for their new home rather than giving the traditional marriage gifts. They are also suggesting, you know, take up a new side gig, you know. Perhaps you like to walk dogs, or you may have some artistic talent. You may want to paint and sell those pictures. Something small, something, you know, you don't spend too much time on, but then you can earn a couple of extra $100 per week and use that as a saving, use that for your down payment, etc., to save. Those are some of the ways I really liked. And do you have some suggestions for our listeners?
Well, I guess this is just a little bit of maybe a pet peeve of mine. But one of the things I sometimes hear people say is, oh, I don't have money for a down payment. And then I see them drive off in a fancy car. I'm not a fancy car guy. I know there's a lot of guys out there that are fancy car guys. I'm more like a Honda Accord guy. But that is one thing that I think when people look at the amount of money they spend every month, if you have a loan on a car, that can be a lot of money. And if you get a car that's not so fancy, that payment could be half, and that allows you to save that. And the other thing is that cars depreciate. So just think about driving your house around and having it go down in value. That's what a car is. So, and sometimes I've seen car prices that they should be houses because they cost so much, but houses appreciate. So cars are really lose-lose kind of situation. They take a lot of your money and they go down in value. So it's, I think that's a good first place to look when you're trying to save some money for a down payment.
I think related to that also is, paying down your credit card debt, because that's almost 20% interest rate. And if you don't pay it off, it adds up really fast. So if you get that bonus paycheck or you get some extra money from your side gigs or whatever, pay down that debt, because that's, you're really cutting down on your unnecessary expenses, is another suggestion that I have.
Very interesting. Well, one interesting story I went through a little bit ago talking about getting that first mortgage. And I finally moved into the house and I'm living on essentially one paycheck a month instead of two. And I had friends that, okay, now you're in your house. Let's still do everything we did before when you lived in the apartment. And so they, I lived in Florida at the time. I lived in West Palm Beach, Florida. And so my favorite team was the Cincinnati Reds, and they played up in the Tampa area. So they said, let's go see spring training baseball up in the Tampa area. Let's just make a road trip. And there were three or four guys that wanted to go. And we would normally do things like this, and we would stay at a Embassy Suites, and we would, you know, go to TGI Fridays and have dinner, and we would buy our tickets in a nice club box level so we could catch the foul balls. And I said, well, I can't really afford, you know, that much money. So can we maybe do it a little bit differently this time? Otherwise, you guys just go and have fun, and I'll join you next time. And they said, sure, sure. We'll let you book the hotel for us, and we'll let you decide where we go eat, and we'll let you book the tickets for the game. So I booked some nosebleed tickets that were like $5. They were terrible seats in the outfield. We could barely see the players, and this was a stadium that only held 10,000 people. I also booked a luxury room at the Days Inn in Tampa, and I remember, I think we heard gunshots. so it wasn't a particularly good part of Tampa we were staying in, and I insisted we eat at the Denny's because I could get dinner for less than $5. But my point to all of that is that I had to make some conscious choices after I took on the responsibility of paying a mortgage. You have no choice. The money goes to that. It's not like you get to choose this month I'm going to pay the mortgage, next month I'm going to go to Paris. But over time, things gradually got better. And my salary started to go up. I had a little bit more disposable income. And so over time, that went away. But in the beginning, it was tough. I won't lie to you.
Yes, I think that's true for most of us. The same applied to us too. I mean, at that time, we had two young kids. My husband was the only one who was working. I was a stay-at-home mom. So, you know, we had to also keep our expenses under control. But one thing I'd like to add is that even when you have a mortgage, and if you have some extra money, it's really great to pay off, you know, just keep getting $200, $500 more. And that reduces the tenure of your mortgage. It can really, you know, help in, you know, instead of a 30-year loan, now you're looking at a 23-year loan or a 24-year loan just by paying up maybe $400 or $500 extra for the mortgage.
Yeah, and that's one thing. I know sometimes people will ask me, they'll say, Eric, I have a 30-year mortgage. I'm writing I'm making my payment each month, but I want to refinance and get a 15-year mortgage. And I'll always say, well, you can refinance. The rate will be just a little bit lower maybe, but you can turn your 30-year mortgage into a 15-year mortgage by just paying a little more each month. And I think a lot of times people are surprised just by paying a tiny bit more. You can turn that 30-year mortgage into a 25-year mortgage or a 23-year mortgage. One other thing that I was surprised about with my first mortgage, it was only 10% down, as I mentioned, and they made me buy something called private mortgage insurance, or PMI. A lot of people might have heard of that. Well, that is mandatory, and it's a monthly fee they charge the borrower. And that means if for whatever reason you default, the mortgage insurance will pay the bank for that amount down to 80%, which is the normal 20% down loan amount. And so I forget what the amount was, but it wasn't cheap. And so when you start paying your mortgage off more quickly and you get the loan down below 80% of the value of your home, you can petition the bank to say, hey, I would like for you to get rid of the private mortgage insurance. And then that portion of your payment goes away.
That's right.
Which was really cool the first time. I just thought I had to pay it forever. And when it went away, I was like, wow, this is $50, $60, $100 extra a month. And I was pretty happy about that.
Yep. So it does add up a lot. So these are really great ways to bring down your mortgage quickly and, you know, have some good financial balance in your bank account because you need that money. I think another way folks can you know, have their home ownership dream alive is look for less competitive markets. You don't need to stay in the city center. You can drive maybe like 30 miles away or 30 minutes away from where your job is, and then you could find probably more affordable housing. And I think we see that around most metros. You move further away, you can find cheaper housing, and, you know, it probably makes more sense for you to buy there.
That's true. And the center of the city is always the most expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the further out you go, generally the less expensive. Now, I know I've been really surprised with some of the top markets that you've shown with Vero Forecast, our forecast product. A lot of those are in the Midwest,
right,
where there are some relatively inexpensive markets compared to, say, Florida or New York or California. And one of the things I recommended to my nephew, he and his wife are 26 years old. They live in Lansing, Michigan. The median house price there is, I think, around $200,000. I may be off a little bit, but it's certainly very reasonable. And I suggested to them a couple of years ago, I said, you guys need to buy a house. I said, how much are you paying for your rent? And it was $1,000 a month for a two bedroom place. I said, that's a lot of money if you can get a house for $200,000. So long story short, they got a house a couple of years ago. They paid $230,000. Mm-hmm. Their mortgage payment is $1,050. So they're paying $50 more than their rent payment. And I asked him the other day, I said, just out of curiosity, what are some houses in your neighborhood like you're selling for? And he told me, oh, now our house, if we would list it, our realtor told us it would be probably worth about $260,000. So right away, I think he's seeing that we are essentially paying the same amount of money every month as we did with rent, but now we're sitting on a paper profit of $30,000. And that's really important because that's building long-term wealth. And that's one of the easiest ways to build long-term wealth. You're essentially leveraging the money that the bank loaned you, and you're making a payment to live somewhere that you have to do anyway, and you get to keep the equity.
That's
a great deal.
Yeah, and a few years down the line, when those mortgage rates do come down, they can always refinance at hopefully 4% rate.
Yes,
Or pay off their mortgage much faster. So, you know, it's a win-win situation for him.
It's a win-win, and it's even better than that. Yeah. Because then the government says, oh, by the way, all of this money you're paying for your $1,050 a month mortgage payment is tax deductible. You can deduct this on your income taxes. So if you're in the 20% income tax bracket, let's say, all of what you've paid in interest, which is most everything in the early stages of a loan, you can deduct that. So you would save $200-$300 a year, or $200-$300 a payment would essentially be refunded to you. So it's effectively a $700 mortgage payment. So you just really can't go wrong. Is I guess my advice to everybody. I was going to ask you one question, Rena. So you know, I got a roommate as one of the things to help me save money. So do kids today get roommates?
Well, that's a very interesting point that you made. Kids may share their homes or their living spaces with friends, but I see that a lot of young adults who even have jobs, they are moving in with their parents, especially in metros where home prices are more than $1 million. I mean, I have friends whose kids are now staying with their parents because it's so much easier, you know, and they don't feel bad about it. There is no longer any taboo of living with your parents, you know. It's very convenient. They're saving on rent. They're saving on utilities. Mom is cooking great food for them. So it's an awesome situation. And then they can save money for that down payment. And, five years down the line, they can buy their own homes. So this is something that folks are doing, or kids can move in with their siblings. And I even have read of, you know, friends pooling their money together and buying a home together because, you know, they're all single and they don't see another way out because individually they do not have the resources to buy a house, but they combine resources and to start off with, they're buying a house. So, you know, there are a lot of these ways to save.
There's a lot of, I think there's a lot of creative ways out there. Yeah. Although I guess with folks of my generation, that's another way of saying for old people, we just would never move back in with our parents. I can't imagine. That would be the, not, I love my parents dearly, but that in my generation would just be viewed as, I don't know, failure if you move back in with mom and dad. Now, if you got a roommate or two or three, that was fine. Society looked upon you favorably. But I think you're right. Today, totally different.
Well, I keep telling my daughters if they move this side of the country ever and if they're in the neighborhood, they should come live at home, you know. So I don't know if they'll take up on my offer.
Oh, well, would mom cook good food at least?
I would. Well, another thing, you know, talking about saving and finding that down payment is, you know, there are other alternatives. Instead of going for a single family home, you can look for a condominium.
Mm, true.
There are duplexes or other townhomes, which are cheaper. But, you know, but before you do that, I think people should look into what are the HOA fees associated with that.
Yeah, that's kind of a challenging one, especially today. I mean, if we look at HOA fees in places like Florida, especially if you're near the coast or in an area that could be impacted by hurricanes, especially high rises, HOA fees are going through the roof in some of those areas. So before looking and saying, hey, this condo is very attractively priced, it's half of a single family home, for example, be careful that you look into the HOA fees. When I bought a house maybe 15, 20 years ago, I was sort of looking at condos because I thought, well, they're less expensive. I'm moving into a market that's very expensive, so I want to look at condos. And that's just really what I did. As I was looking at what my payments would be, I started adding on the condo fees. And I thought, gosh, these are a lot to basically have somebody mow the grass and to have a nice little gate at the entrance. So then I asked my realtor, I said, well, how if we take this amount plus HOA fees, take me to some houses that don't have an HOA.
Right.
And they took me to some really nice houses. And they said, well, why don't we just look in this area?
Yes.
And that's where I ended up buying a house. So it's different everywhere. Every place isn't Florida. Right. Every place isn't California. There's differences based on where you live. And just be a conscious consumer, really, of condominiums and HOA fees. Because with condominiums, you're signing up to a board and their rules and their fees. And you really want to understand what those are, what those could be in the future, because you'll be responsible for paying them. So that's just hopeful advice that everybody would pay attention to.
So, and I think to help with that, there are several mortgage calculators that you can find online, you know, and you can add the cost of the home, how much down payment you're giving, if there are any HOA fees, if there's going to be, how much will the home insurance be, what will be the property taxes. So then you come up with your monthly figure. And then from that, you can tell, you know, this is the amount, this is the maximum amount I can spend on a house because this is all I can afford. And then from there, you can go and, you know, talk to your realtor. Okay, I can only afford a $500,000 home, no more. So you know that, you know, where you are looking for in that price range. So, you know, you're not, you don't get a shock later on with what you're buying.
That sounds like very good advice, Rena. Boy, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners and viewers today on our very first On the House podcast, and we look forward to communicating with you in future weeks and months with other timely issues about the housing market. Again, my name is Eric Fox. I'm Chief Economist here at Veros Real Estate Solutions.
And I'm Reena Agarwal. We hope to come back with another episode soon.